22. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. Riding in the enemy's Gav, Siv quickly began to feel ill. Instead of driving relatively straight as Brendel had, the driver swerved this way and that and plunged up and down the small dunes like he had a death wish. Her stomach roiled, and she realized this was farther than she'd ever been from another Skyr member. The band was a family, and she was stuck here with Brendel Hux, who was hunched down as far from her on the seat as he could get, sulky and glaring. At first, Siv felt as if she were getting feverish, her skin alternating from hot to cold. But then she realized that the sky was growing dark. When a storm came to the Skyr, everyone quickly found a stable place to ride it out, making sure their lines were hitched to steady spikes, as the oil-slick rains and buffeting winds could easily knock a person off a rock spire. On the best days, they huddled in the Nautilus, in the corners away from the hole in the ceiling that gushed toxic rain, even when they put a woven cap over it. On the worst days, the Nautilus was full of raging water, and they hunkered down in the miserable, stinging, sputtering rain with no cover and no way to avoid random lightning strikes and cruel, cutting winds. Siv and Torben had a rock they liked, a bigger sort of spire that could almost hold them both comfortably as they huddled under a protective hide. But this storm was strange. The air didn't feel heavy and wet and thick. It felt hot and sucking and sparking, and when the leader, now driving Brendel's old Gav, shouted something into the wind, Siv's driver accelerated even harder, making her put a hand over her mouth under the mask to keep the sick in and the sand out. It wasn't long before they were approaching the city head-on, and Siv had trouble grasping how very large it was. Bigger than the Skyr and Claw territories put together. Bigger than Terpsichore Station. The wall had to be the height of 10 people, and was solidly covered in those dangerous-looking plants. Just when Siv was sure they were going to splatter against it, a door slid open, just wide enough to allow the Gav's entry. Although the wall had appeared entirely solid from the outside, apparently the vines hid their own secrets. Once they were inside, the city was beyond overwhelming for a woman who had only ever known perhaps 100 people by name in her entire life. It was so crowded with people hurrying to and fro that one of their brightly clad captors had to get out of Siv's Gav and shove people out of the way with a long, colorful stick covered in bells calling, "Clear the streets! The Aratu's orders!" The people were of all ages, some so old that Siv was fascinated by their stooped bodies, wrinkles, and gray hair. In the Skyr, few people lived past 35. But like the Skyr, this place had few babies or small children. The majority of the population seemed to be in their older teens and 20s, the strongest and most robust ages. The next thing she noticed was that the people seemed to be of two different sorts. Gaunt and raggedly dressed, or large and decked out in swathes of vibrant fabric and layers of gold jewelry. She'd never seen bodies carrying so much extra flesh, and it did not escape her that the larger and wealthier folk seemed far happier than their skinny neighbors. Everyone was running to shelter, glancing up worriedly at the darkening sky. When Siv looked to Brendel, a question in her eyes, he shook his head disapprovingly. "I told you. The people who live up high have too much, and the people who scrape in the dirt are starving. Overindulgence and suffering with no in-between, no thought for the city's welfare. This world needs the First Order."
"What can be done for them?" Siv asked.
Brendel raised a feathery red eyebrow. "They must be ruled by someone with a firmer hand." But he didn't go into any further detail, and one of the captors poked him with a stick.
"Don't be talking like that where the rats can hear you," she murmured. "You won't last long making threats like that."
Brendel looked at the woman, whose face was baked a beautiful sandy brown that Siv had never seen before. She had pulled down the cloth that had previously covered her nose and mouth, and her light gray eyes were lined in deep black.
"What's to be done with us?" Brendel asked her.
She gave an elegant shrug.
Not mine to say.
But we're not guests. The woman smiled, showing dimples.
Oh, no. You'd have to earn that first.
The driver grunted.
Hush. Don't give them ideas.
And then their captors went silent, which was disconcerting. Although Siv was accustomed to enemies, they'd always struck violently, never wasting time and resources on adult captives whose hearts couldn't be turned as a child's could. Whatever these people wanted from them? Well, Brendel was right. Siv didn't want to give it. To take her mind off her concerns, she turned her attention to the wonders of the city. Since the Nautilus held so many artifacts, and since she'd spent time at Terpsichore Station, Siv knew a little more about the world that had once been. The structures in the city, those were buildings where people would live and work. The structures, though, they were so close and tall and crowded together that there was barely enough room for the Gavs to pass between them. The paved ground they were on, that was a road. And up ahead, she recognized a building similar to the orientation disc's images of Terpsichore Station before the planet had gone strange. But this city had other structures built up around and atop the old station, making it the base of the highest building in the center of the city, the one that Brendel had so many thoughts about.
Who lives up there?
He asked, arms crossed.
Your god or your king?
In response, their captor pointed a blaster at him and growled,
Do not speak ill of the Aratu.
Sounds like both,
Brendel murmured, barely loud enough to be heard. The woman glared daggers at him but didn't shoot him, although she looked like she sorely wanted to. Another curious thing Siv noticed as they slowly navigated the crowds was the proliferation of plants and greenery. They were atop every roof, hanging from every window and lining every wall in colorful containers. Vines snaked across the roads, bare of leaves where they'd been ripped off by passersby, but budding again as they dug into the sides of buildings and climbed closer to the sun. There were creatures in the plants that Siv didn't quite understand, things flying about that weren't anything like the seabirds and bugs in the skyer. Small and delicate as gems, they buzzed here and there, dipping into the plants and smacking against one another with a pleasing thump before moving on.
What are they?
She asked as they passed near a plant covered with blooms, each one surrounded by the jewel-bright creatures.
Squeeps,
the woman said with a brief smile before hardening her expression and returning to silence.
Why do the starving people not eat them?
Brendel asked. The woman aimed her blaster at Brendel again and shook her head.
Is everything you say blasphemous?
Brendel's eyebrows rose, but he wisely looked away and didn't pursue the conversation further. The sky was almost black now, the wind whipping sand into Siv's eyes under her mask. The air felt electric and uncontrollable, and the streets were empty. Finally, the Gavs reached the building that resembled a Khonstar Mining Corporation station, although it looked nothing like the images Siv had seen on the screen at Terpsichore. This structure had been painted in bright pigments and was covered in vines. The sliding doors were open, showing a yawning white hallway that made Siv's skin crawl. Naturally, they drove straight into it. Once within, the driver parked the Gav in a long row with other vehicles likewise decorated to look dangerous, and Siv recognized a room much like the one where they'd found the speeder bikes. A hangar. Each of the Gavs plugged into the wall, and there was a gentle hum of machinery. Brendel, for all his sullenness, had a sharp look about him as he took in the room, and Siv wished she had some idea of what he was thinking. She was pretty sure he was developing a plan. Among the Skyer, plans hadn't been something to keep secret from the warriors. If even one person didn't know what to do in case of emergency, things tended to fall apart. But Brendel was crafty and strange, and once again she was reminded that something about him didn't sit well with her.
Barely made it,
the leader crowed, hitting the button that closed the hallway door. The howling of the windstorm stopped, and the room went unnaturally silent.
Out,
their captor said, blaster pointed at Brendel as if she didn't even consider Siv a threat. Brendel hopped down, followed first by their captor, then Siv. No matter which way she moved, blasters pointed in her face. After so much time spent on hot, shifting sand, it was strange to stand on the cold, hard floor, and she wobbled for a moment, trying to regain her footing.
"Walk,"
the woman said, nudging Siv in the back with the blaster. That, too, was a new experience. Having grown up with a cache of old, broken blasters in the Nautilus, Siv wasn't accustomed to thinking of the small, blunt, harmless-looking machines as a real threat. But when the woman nudged her again, she moved in the direction indicated. Brendel was already walking, his head turning this way and that, up and down. They were soon joined by the others, and Siv felt a profound sense of relief to be near Torben and Gosta and Phasma again. The stormtroopers fell in step behind Brendel, carrying poor Ellie between them. Siv couldn't tell if the woman was breathing or not. She hung between her fellow troopers, limp and unconscious. Gosta was awake, but still in Torben's arms, and Phasma, clearly dazed from being shocked, was having trouble walking in a straight line. When Torben's arm touched her own, Siv smiled slightly, but she knew where she was needed, so she bumped against him in a telling way and hurried to help Phasma. Now, the Skyr were a people who enjoyed physical touch and comfort, considering that they faced a cold, unpredictable, cruel life. But Phasma had always held herself apart. Siv trusted Phasma with her life and knew she was the most talented strategist and the fiercest fighter on the planet. But that didn't mean Siv was just going to walk up and put an arm around the staggering fighter. Even then, there was an aura around Phasma, almost like an animal's unspoken warning to keep a distance. "What do you need?" she asked, walking at Phasma's side and holding out one arm to show it was available to be grasped.
"My helmet and my eyesight," Phasma snapped. "My vision is blurry, and my fingertips are burnt, numb."
But she didn't take Siv's arm, so Siv let it fall back to her side and merely walked slightly closer to her leader than she normally would, ready to catch her if she fell.
"No talking,"
one of the captors said, waving one of the electric sticks. He looked like he had a temper, so Siv stopped talking. As soon as they left the hangar and entered a hallway, the station became eerily similar to Terpsichore, with the same smooth white walls and floors and cold, bluish lighting. Siv saw no droids, though, and she did notice some changes in the layout. Wide windows opened on busily working machines, and although they were being marched quickly along, Siv saw that many of the machines appeared to be making or manipulating the bright fabrics everyone in the city wore. She realized they were following a green line on the wall, so she wasn't surprised when the next door their captor opened led to barracks. The room was quite similar to the one at Terpsichore Station, but it held twice as many beds and was occupied by at least 30 people. Most of them were thin to the point of emaciation. That didn't bode well, Siv thought.
"Hands out," the leader said.
One by one, he unlocked their binders and shoved his prisoners into the room, all while the man with the sneer and the electric prod blocked the exit.
"What about Gosta and Ellie?"
Siv asked as soon as she was free. The leader shrugged at her, so she added,
"The women who were hurt?"
He shrugged.
"Not my problem. They'll get better or they won't, as the Aratu wills it."
"But what do we do?"
Brendel asked as the leader turned to leave.
"You do the only thing you can do,"
the man said, his eyes twinkling.
"You wait for the gods to shine on you and hope you don't die."
Their captors left laughing, and the Skyr and First Order folk were left to deal with an entire room full of strangers, none of whom looked friendly.
"Fresh meat,"
someone murmured. Despite her injury and the fact that she'd been stripped of her weapons and helmet, Phasma's posture changed, subtly shifting into a fighting stance.
"Not for you,"
she growled. And then they charged her.